Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sander Lanch podcast. Today, we are going to be discussing three chapters of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. It's Interlude 9, and then chapters 52 and 53, wherein Seth kills the king of Yaakoved. Dalinar has another vision, and we start trying to think about them sensibly for the first time, I feel like. And then there's a casualty that some people in the group may have called in the third chapter. Maybe, you know, just it's a possibility. So I'm Data, and with me today is...
Jamie.
Dak.
And Joe.
So hang on to something, everybody. The Sander Lanch is about to begin. So yeah, we had Seth come back. I know that Dak especially has been waiting for that for a bit. What did you guys think of these three chapters?
Seth's chapter was pretty cool. It was this, it gave me like a real flashback to when we were reading Mistborn, and you'd hear that sort of very detailed, this is how I'm pushing and pulling and what I was doing, you know, from Kelsey's point of view. It was giving me those vibes big time, but the cinematic, like I had to read the first couple of pages a couple of times to get myself back in the rhythm of reading something like that, but that you could just see it happening, and then that the description of, you know, how I've done the basic lashing or the full lashing and what that means. And I thought it was very well done. I quite enjoyed it. I also felt really bad for Seth. He hates it so much. He clearly doesn't want to do this, but it was a good chapter. He won, I guess. He did what he was supposed to, but, you know, Yaakoved, a little closer to home, particularly for Shallan, so kind of crazy we won't hear from Shallan anytime soon. Our other chapters, Dalinar, nice to see him back. I'd sort of forgotten that he'd resigned or was going to step down, so that was a good refresher. I love that we've finally gotten to the point of, hey, maybe we should fact check some of what you're actually experiencing to see whether it's true or not. I'm really glad that we've addressed that. But yeah, that was, I mean, not as intense as the last vision that we saw, I guess, but it'd be pretty horrifying to watch, you know, these people who are protecting you just throw everything down and walk away, and then whoever's left fight over it. It's a bit rough. And who was in our last chapter? We had Dunny. Oh, Dunny. Yeah. Poor Dunny. I did feel bad for him. No one deserves to die that way. But Teft, I was having a good giggle. It's like, no, that's pretty cool, isn't it? That you've got this pouch of spheres that are, you know, keep them infused all the time. Isn't it weird that no one's being hit on our runs? It's like you couldn't be any more obviously trying to point Kaladin in that direction. So hoping that Kaladin will start thinking about that and will see some answers there soon. But overall, good chapters. Still loving the story. Looking forward to seeing where it goes next.
You make a good point about Seth. Like, he clearly does not want to be doing this. And I think it's actually kind of impressive, the level of dedication, because I don't know that I could, you know, something that I hate that much, I might just be like, you know what, maybe I won't do it.
Yeah. And he had that line in there that was like you fool, like now you've given me a reason. Like, I didn't have a reason before, but now I've got one. You tried to trap me, and yeah, now I'm gonna, you think I was going full ball before. Well, here we go. So yeah, I do feel for him.
And I also agree, it's about time somebody took like a reasonable approach to Dalinar's visions instead of just like arguing about them. Like, why don't we think a little bit?
Yeah, how accurate is this stuff? Is there any way you could have known about this stuff? We'll just assume he's crazy and move on. That makes way more sense.
To be fair, usually when people are seeing visions,
probably your first crazy reaction on some is level.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah, which is fine. Especially, even they made reference that he was having a really violent reaction that Adolin had to hold the chair down until he sort of revived, I guess.
Yeah.
But what he was experiencing was not really violent. Like last time it was really violent and he was in a battle and trying to save someone. And I get thrashing in that instance. Was he thrashing the whole time? Like, is that just the storm is having such an impact on his body that he's thrashing, even though he was completely calm, like until the very end of his vision? I just thought that was a bit weird as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a little bit strange. Hopefully we will find out more about what it really means. Or not. They'll just never tell us.
One, always another mystery, always another secret. Just chalk that up to one for the books.
Yep. Good chapters. Seth's was simultaneously like amazing and horrifying. Just seeing what like everything goes through, how much he hates what he's doing, but he is just so compelled to do whatever he's done. And now he's just destabilized a country by assassinating the king. Which, if Shallan is heading back home,
yeah, that's true. The second king on his list. Maybe there's been more. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like it was like really cool action scene, but I'm just like, holy shit, just. Although I have to agree with him when he was saying to the king, it's like, you set a trap for me in the middle of a feast. What the fuck is wrong with you? Yeah, really, really felt for that one. And I agree with Jamie. I like that when Dalinar is having these visions, they're just like, all right, maybe let's just double check the accuracy of these and let's see if that gives us anything to go on. Like, oh, that's a very simple solution. Why did no one think of that? So, yeah, that was all really good. Like, the stuff with Dunny was just like, oh, it's more horrors on Bridge Crew. And I think it was meant to be like, yeah, like, we feel bad for Dunny because he's been around since the start. But at the same time, it's like, he wasn't really that developed. Like, he was kind of just there. So it's like, I mean, yes, I feel bad for the poor guy. But it's not like he hasn't been as developed as, say, Rock or Teft or Moash. So as if we'd lost one of them, we might have felt something a bit more. Something a bit different for Moash than the others, but nonetheless.
You and Moash.
There's just something about the guy that makes my skin crawl. I don't know what.
And they even sort of like the end of this chapter this time, they even sort of have like a little moment.
Yeah. 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 I don't know how to feel about that. Something is just like setting me off about this guy. I'm like, I don't think this is going to be a good thing. But yeah, we'll see.
Moash is the hero of the story.
Bullshit.
But yeah, and you make a good point. Like, we got a couple little bits of Dunny. Like, he can sing, and Rock yells at him like, sing. But we didn't really get that much like in depth character stuff.
Yeah, I think it really was like less of a we mourn this character because we got to know him so well as a we mourn this character because he has been there since Kaladin got his shit into gear and started learning everyone's names. That was it.
Yep. Well, and also, his death's pretty hardcore. It's messed up.
It was fucked up.
I mean, not as... I gotta say, I am almost done with the Nevernight trilogy now.
Jesus, that was quick.
Yeah, I'm in the third book, like 80% of the way through or something, and I was just like, this is some intense stuff.
Oh, yeah. Times. There's crazy shit going on with that.
The one thing that I was just like, I feel like I could do without this is the super graphic sex scenes that seem kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. They,
but I
kind of forget about those because they weren't as integral to the story.
No, they're not. Yeah. That's kind of it's like, why did we need this here? But yeah, sorry to distract, but I was just like, I got to mention that since you'd recommended that I read these books, but
like, are you enjoying them?
I am. It's been a lot of
success.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Seth interlude. It was definitely my favorite interlude of the three. I agree with what Jamie said. Like, all the fighting stuff was very, very fun to read, very reminiscent of Mistborn's fighting styles, and at least in the description, anyway. And it as I was reading, I thought, man, that's like the super matchup you want to see, a guy like Seth versus like Wax or Kelsier, like who would win based on these different power sets. Like, I'd like to see that kind of fight kick off and happen. So what does everybody else think? Who let's say Wax and Seth, because I feel like Wax and Seth's powers, like lashing, and stuff seems to be he used a lot of like weight tricks, which is kind of like Wax's bag too. So like, what do you guys think?
I hadn't considered it, but yeah, now like now that you've mentioned it, like a Wax and Seth matchup could like be fascinating.
That would be pretty cool.
The place my mind went was probably like in terms of Mistborn fight scenes was closest to Kelsier versus the Inquisitor in Final Empire. Mm. Where the two, like Kelsey and the Inquisitor, were just like going through the cage and pushing and pulling on everything. Cause, like, I think that'd be, cause, like, yes, Seth is using a lot of weight powers, but he's also using a lot of, there's a, because of what he's doing with the lashings, you could, like, translate it as pushing and pulling as well, which is Kelsey's bag. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Kelsey's got a lot of bags, though.
Kelsey has a lot of bags.
So, yeah. My thing about, like, the matchup between the two of them is, you don't have as much like projectile weapons in Stormlight, and like Seth can make himself fly to the top of like and walk on the ceiling or the wall or whatever, but I'm not sure that would save him from Wax putting a bullet in him. Although I guess it depends on how well the Stormlight can heal him.
But I mean, he was able to, you know, lash things. Like it wouldn't be as instant. Like you've got to infuse it sort of over and over again, mm-hmm. but to be able to then infuse it with like all that Stormlight and then lash it in a direction at a speed that is, you know, 10 times its weight or whatever. If you're really skilled at it, I reckon you'd be all right.
Fair point. Yeah. Wax is great. The end.
He is great. Yeah. And so the Dalinar chapter, I did like that, like ever, like the other two, I like that they're actually trying to take these visions somewhat seriously. And I think like, Maybe the sauce that has been missing from the Dalinar Adolin like going back and forth, which is, to be honest, for me as a reader, been kind of annoying, is input from Renarin. I feel like now that Renarin has given his input and like it has been listened to, I feel like maybe things are going to start moving in a more interesting and good direction. So hopefully that'll continue. There's some weird stuff going on with Dalinar, obviously. I don't really know how I feel about his future. I know several of us have possibly suggested that maybe he won't make it out of the book, but I guess time will tell on that one. And then the Kaladin stuff, it's very obvious Teft knows what's going on. So like, I really want Teft to either explain it to Kaladin and us, but we got more confirmation from the Seth interlude that like you use, you know, Stormlight from spheres to perform the magic in this particular case. So does the magic work the same way for everybody? Does it work differently? That's what I'm interested to know. And so then another question is like that made me think of this is like the Fabrials seem like they allow you to use the magic through like a device. So you can you can harness the power of the Stormlight in the stones with a device. And the device probably isn't good at regulating energy output. And so maybe that's why like some of the stones become destroyed, be my guess. And so that made me think, well, maybe Shallan didn't need the Fabrial because she also has the power to use like Stormlight without the use of a device. So, you know, potentially anybody could use to learn a Fabrial maybe, but people who have extra magic-y powers don't need the devices. Another thing that made me think of that was like the part of the story where in the vision, when they all drop their like swords and stuff, the like the glow in them dies out or whatever. So it's like, oh, that's another thing that made me think like those people knew how to use this power innately. And then everybody else who's using the sharp blades afterwards, it's borrowed power that like they don't actually possess the power to like transfer in and out. That wasn't probably a good way to word that. But anyway, so. What would it be like then for somebody, say, like Kaladin, to actually wield a shard blade? Like, would that be different than, say, Dalinar doing it? And so when Seth wields his blade, is it different? He obviously doesn't need the blade to fight, but, like, is it different? Does it look different from when other people wield it? That's kind of what I'm more interested to know.
Okay.
But yeah, good stuff.
So if there's certain people who can just like innately use power that maybe you would otherwise need a Fabrial to use. Mm-hmm. Do we think that is it like Mistborn where it's genetic and you're just like born with this ability, or how do you get it?
That's a good question. I think maybe just, and I'm just coming up with this off the top of my head since you asked the question. I'm thinking maybe it has more to do with your connection to the other living forces on the Earth, or not the Earth, whatever, Roshar, because we know this planet is very like alive. And so maybe it more has to do more with your connection with the planet, or potentially the shards, whatever the case is on the planet. Maybe you have to, like, we talked about like Odium, but then also another shard possibility was like, what did I say? Like Valor or something? Like,
oh yeah, maybe, yeah, you said that.
So maybe like if you're a valorous person, like you, I don't know, something about your connection with the planet / shards.
Okay, so it's about like if you act in a way that's I thought you meant when you said connection, I thought you meant like you're friends with this shard.
No, I meant like the actions that you take connect you more closely with the planet / shard. Kind of like, you know, Marsh is like, oh, my brother, you know, you do my brother's work, the work of ruin or whatever. And I was like, huh. So like even some of the actions on Skadriel, I feel like connect them more closely with certain parts of the shard or whatever.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Well, and we know that like Kelsier, we kept being told that Kelsier wasn't a good candidate to take up the shard of preservation. Preservation was like, no, you can't do this because you're not like, you're not of preservation. You don't do preservation-y things.
Yeah. So like if you, yeah, and it just depends, right? Because like on Cell, the shards are dead and they're, I guess their bodies are part of the planet. So like, let's say that one of the shards on Roshar imbued most of its body power into, if it's still alive, cool, if it's not, whatever, but imbued most of its power into like life on the planet itself. Then each life form, if acting in a way maybe that the shard would act, gives them more connection / power. I don't know, I'm just guessing here, throwing ideas out.
So what is Kaladin starting to be able to use powers because he's acting valorous?
Yeah, well, we don't, you know, when he was a kid in the flashbacks, he thinks about his family some, but he's mainly thinking about himself.
Mm-hmm.
The moment that his brother is drafted into the army, he stops thinking about himself and starts thinking about his brother. That is something that is, you know, for lack of a better word, like chivalrous. Like he's putting his brother ahead of himself and being like, this is not what I wanted anymore, but I've got to go to protect you. And then even after his brother's gone, he still stays in the army and does his best to protect the other people. And he makes a point that like everybody, he can't protect anybody. He's been trying to protect people all this time and he still can't do it. But I think whether there's a magical curse on him or not, you know, that is something that maybe like he has continued to act since he decided to go and protect his brother in a way that's putting others in front of himself. So maybe that's kind of like, since that's been his bag, that's like what's been keeping him in connection with this power. I don't know.
Yeah, he does put a lot of emphasis on saving other people before himself. It's true.
Yeah. And then if you want to make an argument for Seth, like he's so honor bound to his code of ethics or whatever, or like his servitude. I mean, maybe that's what gives him the connection. I don't know. And then Dalinar's connection could be because of him. I mean, we see an example in this very chapter where he's like, you know, I do these things. He's talking to, you know, Navani or whatever. It's like, I do these things because I tell people they should do these things. And if I don't do these things, then I'm worse than the people that already don't do it, because I'm a hypocrite, because I'm telling everybody they gotta act this certain way. If I don't act that way, then it, you know, it messes everything up. So maybe that's his connection, is like being bound to that code.
He is very dedicated to his code, much like Seth. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. So, a lot of spitballing, a lot of ideas, but just thoughts.
Even when there might be something he wants, like he keeps thinking how hot Navani is.
Oh, yeah.
Then he's like, nope, can't do it.
And she's like, in other cultures, like, I don't care. It's like, I already told you, like, this is how I do my thing. I can't not do it this way.
Okay. let's move into these chapters. Some deep thoughts from Joe. In the
some some thoughts. If you hate them, too bad.
So we start out with Interlude 9, Death Wears White, where Seth, Sun Volano, Truthless of Shinovar, is slaughtering dudes.
Yeah, real Assassin's Creed title here, bro.
You said that last time.
Yeah, that we must have made reference to it.
So yeah, we find out that he has come to assassinate the king of Yakaved, King Hanavanar, which that's a hell of a name you got there, King. And he shows up, and there's a feast going on, and he says that he's been given instructions, or he thinks that he's been given instructions to just like slaughter, like wholesale. He doesn't want to, but he has no choice. He takes out soldiers and women trying to just run away after he bursts into the feasting hall. And the king is like, yeah, armsmen, come on. And we find out that he is not a shard bearer, but there are rumors that he secretly has a shard blade, which, as it turns out later, is true. And then there's these big wooden tables that they're feasting on, and he keeps using them to like, he lashes them to like walls or doorways to like block them so people can't get out. There he is. His orders were simple. Kill. Kill as you've never killed before. Lay the innocent screaming at your feet and make the light eyes weep.
Man.
Which, holy fuck.
Yeah. This guy does not like light eyes.
Is it Kaladin who's behind this?
Nah. I think it's more likely to be Kelsier.
We do know that the Ghost Bloods are up to something or other around here.
Yeah. No, we do know he likes to kill nobility.
He does. And
I like that he had to wear white when he killed King Gavilar. Because the Parshendi are like, oh, that's our tradition, is when you go to kill somebody, you have to wear white so they can see you coming. But now it's like he's the assassin in white. That's his thing. So he has to also wear white when he goes to kill other people. Yeah, you know, slashy, slashy, stabby, stabby, a lot of guys. And then it turns out that the king, this was all part of the plan. He's got some guys like hiding under the table. It says that they burst out from beneath the king's table. Two men in full shard plate carrying shard blades. Which shard blades are like 6 feet long. So, like, I don't know how these guys were hiding under the king's table, but whatever. Maybe there's a big, maybe it's a huge table and they got like a long tablecloth.
Can't they make them poof in and out of existence when they need them?
That's true. Yeah. But even still, like, shard blade, you're a huge guy. If you're, I mean, shard plate, rather. If you're wearing shard plate.
Okay, yeah. The plate's fair.
And then also, the king summons his shard blade. It's like, so the rumors are true.
Maybe they were the table.
They were the table. Change table. Would you mind changing into two shard bearers? Okay.
All right. Whatever you say, boss.
These two dudes just poof into existence. It's like, oh, holy shit. I'm a real boy.
not born. Poofed into existence.
And then we also get a bunch of guys coming in who have these new half shards, the shields that can block a shard blade, which we heard about briefly way earlier in the book, but... like, Dalinar actually kind of had trouble believing it. But no, apparently it's for real. And the king's like, you think I didn't know you were coming after you killed three of my high princes? We're ready for you, assassin. And this is where Seth's like, you're an idiot. Because you set a trap for me during a feast, and now I can blame you for the deaths of all of these innocent people instead of me. So
I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
Yeah. And so it's a big old fight. With these shard bearers and the guys holding the shields, there's like 20 guys with these shields, and he starts like, he dismisses his shard blade and starts like slipping between them, grabbing them and like lashing them to the ceiling so they fly up to the ceiling.
Sure.
Makes me think of the scene, like, it's one of the best scenes in the X-Men franchise in First Class, where the bad guy's teleporter was just teleporting in, grabbing people, teleporting up in the sky and just dropping them. When they start falling off the roof, I'm just like, geez, that's going to be a mess.
Yeah. Like at one point, he picks up a dining knife and he infuses it 3 times to make it fly super fast directly at the king. Like, how badass would that have been? Like, from across the room, you just like let the knife go and it gets him. It doesn't quite manage it, but that would have been a cool moment. And so, yeah, he fights these guys. He takes care of most of the guys with the shields pretty quickly, but these two shard bearers are a little tougher. And he can't lash them because they're wearing plate, so he has to do some other stuff. But that doesn't mean that he can't lash things. So, for instance, he goes up to, like, a rock in the wall and lashes it a bunch of times straight at one of the shard bearers. And it, like, the mortar cracks and the stone flies out 20 times its normal acceleration and just, like, crushes the shard bearer guy. Like, breaks his plate and squishes him against the wall.
You don't often get to use the word. But I think this is an appropriate use of the word pulverizes.
No, yeah, I think so. And then he takes the other shard bearer out by, like, the guy steps up on a piece of table, and Seth lashes the table to the ceiling to make him fall over. And then Seth goes up to the ceiling and comes back down and summons his blade as he's, like, flying back towards the guy just in time to basically slash him in half. And then the king realizes, oh, shit, okay, my, that didn't work like I thought it was going to work. And so he runs, but it is to no avail. Seth chases him down, and the chapter ends with, "What are you?" the man whispered. And Seth says, "Death." And he stabs the dude in the face. So that's the end of King Hanavanar. We didn't know him, so it's hard to care that much. But somebody did mention, like, this is Shallan's home country. So if Shallan does end up going back home, things may be a little crazy when she gets there. After three high princes and then the king were assassinated by Seth.
Yep, the country's just been destabilized entirely.
Yep. And we start part four, Storm's Illumination. And the first chapter is Highway to the Sun. And we are back on the epigraphs, like what we started with, where it gets recorded like this was 107 seconds pre-death. He says, "I'm standing over the body of a brother. I'm weeping. Is that his blood or mine? What have we done?" And so Dalinar has told Adolin about his plan to abdicate and make Adolin High Prince. And I do like that somebody mentioned, like, having Renarin in the room seems to change the dynamic. He always seems very chill in this conversation, but he makes good points. Like, Adolin's like, "I never claimed you were insane." And Renarin's just like, "Actually, I believe you did." But Adolin...
Renarin is just earning his keep as MVP.
Yes, he's the one who keeps actually coming up with ideas during this chapter, so I appreciate him.
Yeah. Renarin comes up with solutions. Adolin just bangs a new chick every week.
Yeah, I mean, Dalinar even tells him later. It's like, "You got a lot of complaints, Adolin, but you got any suggestions to, like, solve this?" "No, yeah, I got a date."
It really seems like Adolin is, to all appearances, the ideal Alethi prince, because he's a man of action, he's good, and he's a good fighter, but he doesn't think shit through, whereas Renarin is, like, not active at all, like, not very good in a fight, but fuck, he's smart, and he's insightful.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah.
Both of them got one of Dalinar's good qualities.
Yeah, I can see that. But Adolin's just like, "I don't want to be High Prince." And Dalinar's like, "Yeah, tough shit." Leadership is rarely about what we want, son. I think too few among the Alethi elite realize that.
Yeah, too bad, kid. You have to do it anyway.
Also, we talked about this.
So Dalinar says he's going to go back to Alethkar. He's worried that they've taken, like, every single Shardbearer to the Shattered Plains. Maybe somebody needs to go back and help out maintaining the stability of their homeland. But no more time for talking. The high storm is about to start. And we jump into Dalinar's vision, where he is in a fortress, a single-walled fortress, it says, built of red stone. And they're just, like, on guard duty up on the top of the wall, and nobody's really paying that much attention. At one point, he's like, "Hey, guys, you know, pay attention." And they're like, "Wait, really? From that from you, Leaf?" And Dalinar's like, "Huh. I guess they don't really respect me very much, whoever I am in this vision."
"I guess I'm a jerk in this world."
Maybe he's just lazy. It's like, "But you're the laziest one, Leaf. What are you talking about?"
Yeah. "You guys all pay attention, so I don't have to."
"But you are lazy, right?" "Don't get me started."
"Don't get me started."
Yeah.
Never would have expected that to be one of the most quoted lines from that show that we do. Because we seem to bring that one up all the time.
It's true. I love that. I think that's one of my favorite, like,
all the scruffy stuff. The yeah.
Scruffy's that's not old. Scruffy.
That's not Scruffy.
Oh, that wasn't Scruffy. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
That's what's his name?
That's, like, gross trucker guy. I don't think he has an. I don't know if he has a name.
Blue collar job guy.
Yeah. "I'm on loan from the Louvre.
I'm on loan from the Louvre."
It's like squeaky voice teen in Simpsons who does all of the. Although apparently that kid has a name. Hold on. I want to look up and see if either of these people or see what these people's names are. Another time. Squeaky voice teen is named Jeremy Friedman. And trucker guy, his name is Sal.
Sal.
Yeah,
that's it. Oh, I knew Sal, yeah. That's for squeaky voice today. And like, nah, sorry, that's like telling me comic book guy has a real name. And I know that they put that in an episode that he does have a real name. I'm like, I don't care, it didn't happen.
No, comic book guy, yeah. Forever.
It's the place that he's found himself at is called Feverstone Keep, but he's never heard of that, so it's not super helpful. And it's freaking cold wherever it is, and they've had 8 weeks of winter. And he's like, geez, since when do you have 8 weeks of winter? It's crazy.
Oh, man, the groundhog saw his shadow.
So yeah. Dalinar has the advantage of knowing that he doesn't show up to a place in these visions just for nothing to happen. So he's like, everyone be ready. Something's going to happen. I don't know what, but something. And then they spot something, a large group on the move out there. And a writer goes out to see who it is and comes back to say that it's the Order of the Stone Wards and a large number of Windrunners all on foot. The Radiants have left the front lines, which are somewhere near here, I guess. And they're coming here for some reason. And Dalinar does note at some point, he's like, so this is two of the orders of Knights Radiant, but there are 10 orders. So where are the other eight? So we've been told two of these names, the Order of the Stone Wards and the Windrunners.
Mm.
And then also, like, as they show up, some other dudes drop out of the sky as well until there's like 300 of these Radiants standing out there.
Yeah. So are these guys, it doesn't say if these guys are from the same orders or not.
They're the same color. Like, he says that when the Windrunners and Stone Wards are running at them, some are brown and some are blue with the glowiness of their armor and stuff. And then the guys dropping out of the sky are also blue. So possibly the same as the other blue guys, but maybe not. It's hard to say.
Should all get tabards. We should all get tabards.
But apparently one of these orders can fly or something because they just like drop out of the sky.
Yeah, maybe those are the Windrunners.
An Iron Man landing. Yeah, Windrunners, it would make sense if they could fly, I guess. And so then they summon their blades and they jam them into the ground and then they start like dropping their plate and they just turn around and leave. And Dalinar runs out there like, wait, why are you guys doing this? I don't understand. And he realizes he got an inkling early on what he was seeing. He thinks this is the day that the Radiance turned again against mankind. Now he calls it the Recreants. And so he's trying to ask these guys like, what does this mean? Why are you doing this? And no one is paying any attention to him. And meanwhile, the soldiers from inside the fortress are coming out and starting to grab these shard blades that were glowing at first, but the glow has started to disappear. And everyone wants a shard blade, but there's not enough shard blades for everybody, so the soldiers start killing each other for the shard blades, which I guess shouldn't be a terrible surprise, but it's kind of fucked up. And finally, one of the guys talks, but it's the voice that he's heard in the other visions. And it says, they are the first. They were the first, and they were also the last. And Donald was like, is this the day of Recreants? The way says, these events will go down in history. They will be infamous. You will have many names for what happened here. And Dalinar says, why? Why did they abandon their duty?
Also, could you just give me like a yes or no? Why are you going to be all like, there's many names for this. I'm like, okay, yes, but is one of them the Recreants or no?
Is one of them the thing that I said? And the voice says, I've said that I cannot help be of much help to you. The night of sorrows will come. The true desolation, the Everstorm. He's like, then answer my questions. And the guy says, read the book, unite them. Which, once again, that's just super vague. Dalinar has to be like, the book? Do you mean The Way of Kings or a different book? Like, what book are we talking about? And the voice does not respond to that either.
It's unhelpful.
It is super unhelpful, right? Like, who's just like, read the book? It's like, there's more than one book, my man. Like, which one do you want?
There's thousands of books.
Yeah. Also, Dalinar Millions. Can't read. But then he comes back to himself and he's like, okay, guys, I'm done. And Renren and Adolin mentioned that, like, he was thrashing around and he speaks some sort of gibberish while he's under. Renren says it's unearthly strange, skewed like a wooden building pushed to a slant by the wind, which that's an interesting simile. And they start talking about Dalinar's like, look, you haven't convinced me that what I'm seeing is not real, but you've convinced me that it might not be something from the Almighty. I might be crazy. I can't ignore them, though. So I can't, like, Adolin's just like, well, just if I've convinced you that these are fake, then just ignore them. And he's like, no, I can't do that. Maybe they're supernatural without being of the Almighty. And Adolin's like, well, how was that? And then Renren jumps in with like, oh, the old magic. And Adolin's like, what? The old magic is a myth. And Dalinar's like, no, I know for a fact that it's not. And Renren's like, okay, but to be affected by the old magic, you would have had to travel to the West and seek it, right? And Dalinar's like, yeah, that's true. The empty place in his memories where his wife had once existed had never seemed as obvious to him as it did at that moment. But they decide, like, Dalinar refuses to talk about it. He's like, I'm not going to tell you guys my curse and my boon. I don't think this is related to the Night Watcher, but the whole point is we don't know. And I can't know. There's no way for me to know the truth of this. And Dalinar's going to step down, and Adolin keeps being like, no, don't do that. And finally, Dalinar just snaps at him, like, you're quick to complain, which seems to be a habit of yours, but I don't see you offering a legitimate alternative. And that's when Renarin's like, well, I mean, why don't we try to prove whether or not the visions are true? You say that they're super detailed. Surely we could try to prove some of these details real or fake. And maybe, you know, looking through some histories. That's the kind of thing that Yasna does, right? So maybe she could help us. And so he decides, yeah, that's a good idea, Renarin. Glad you're here, not just Adolin being a whiny bitch. Even Adolin has to admit, like, okay, no, that's a good plan. And so they decide to have somebody write down his experience so that it can be researched. But he does not want any of his scribes in on this because they're all like the wives of his officers, and that's an awkward thing to have to reveal. So they decide that Navani will do the trick. And like, Adolin's like, that's a good idea, but I thought you didn't trust her. And he's like, well, I trust her to keep her word. And apparently she's really good at keeping secrets, better than the women of his court. She'd probably find a way to manipulate him using the knowledge, but at least the secret would be safe from his men. That's a hell of a trade-off. And I feel I don't know that kind of thinking puts Navani in a very good light. You guys have been a little suspicious of her before now.
Yeah, I still don't know what to think. I'm kind of just like, oh, we're going to see inside her head in these chapters coming up. So I might just reserve judgment until that happens and we get a better sense of her character.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's definitely up to something, but we just don't know what.
He also gives Adolin permission to prepare in case Sadeas denounces them as having tried to kill Elokar. But he's hoping it doesn't come to that, because Sadeas and Dalinar going to war would mean the kingdom falls. And then we cut to him finishing his explanation to Navani of his vision, and she writes it all down. And it says that she's actually really good at this. Like, she picks out details, knows when to prod for more, doesn't even say anything about how weird a request this is. And she just keeps thinking, like, oh, man, she's beautiful. And afterwards, Adolin's like, well? And she's like, well, what? What do you think? And she's like, I don't know. You weren't expecting me to know about this, right? You said you wanted me to contact Yasna. And just like Dak just says, Adolin says, well, I mean, you have to have an analysis. And she goes, I reserve judgment, dear. And then she distracts Adolin by being like, hey, that girl that you like, she's pretty cool. Did you know that she likes this, what is it called? Some sort of melon. An Avramelon? And he's like, I did not know that. And she's like, well, good. I'd hate to have wasted that time figuring stuff out. I happen to bring a basket of them. They're right outside. Which is a very slick way to get rid of Adolin by distracting him with a girl.
They're like, girl, go. Get out of here.
And so she's like, I wanted some time alone with Dalinar. And he's like, oh, so what did you want to ask me? Oh, I didn't want to ask you anything. We just, we're family. Shouldn't we spend some time together talking? And she starts coming on to him. And he's like, no, I can't do this. You're my sister. And she says, we're not related by blood. In some kingdoms, a union between us would be mandated by tradition. We aren't in other countries. This is Alethkar, and there are rules. And she's like, okay, well, what are you going to do if I don't go? You going to call for help? Have me hauled away?
Am I the only one who gives a shit about the rules?
It's very much, yeah. And he's just like, please, please don't do this. I'm tired. Excellent. That might make it easier to get what I want. And he's like, I want you to leave now. And she's just like, can't you relax just a little bit? Everyone else, I cannot be everyone else. If I ignore our code and the ethics, what am I? The other high princes don't follow, you know, what's right. And if I abandon my principles, I'm even worse than them. I'm a hypocrite because I've let them know what I think of them for how they operate. And eventually he convinces her to go. And it's a very awkward situation for everybody, I feel like.
Yeah, it's not a great one. Not a great situation to be in.
It's sad because clearly he's interested in her. And clearly she's interested in him. But it's just like, now the rules say that we can't be together. Is it Romeo and Juliet? They're a little old for that.
Nah, not really. I mean, that situation's entirely different. Also, hopefully they won't kill themselves at the end of all this.
I mean, you guys have theorized from almost the beginning that Dalinar was going to die this book. So
yeah, but I didn't say he was going to kill himself.
Yeah,
that would be a downer, right?
Yeah. Also,
he's
not the guy. He's not the kind of guy like Romeo was, where he gets banished and he's like, I'd rather be dead than banished.
I would be really upset if the reason Dalinar didn't make it through the book, though, was a bit of a lover's spat.
Yeah,
that's fair. So, a little ignoble way for him to go out. So the last chapter we read is called Dunny, and the epigraph says, he must pick it up, the fallen title, the tower, the crown, and the spear. Which, what does any of that mean? The one thing that I can point out that I have no idea if it's relevant or not is that the tower and the crown are what makes up the glyph of House Colin that Dalinar uses. It's like a stylized tower and crown, if I remember right. So maybe it's related to him in some way, but it's hard to know.
Interesting.
What a spear has to do with it. So we come in the middle of a bridge run, and Kaladin gets like a scrape by an arrow. It like cuts his cheek, But other than that, they don't really take any arrows on the run. Like there's, it says at one point, like 10 arrows strike the wood near him, but none of them hit him or anybody else for that matter. So, hey, that's awesome. But whatever, like whatever happened there with the 10 arrows is so odd that several of the Parshendi who've been shooting at them lower their bows and stop their like chanting, singing, whatever, and are like, what the hell just happened? So they can see that something weird is happening. Kaladin doesn't seem to acknowledge it in any way. And we find out that, like, Sadius's archers, once they get the bridges set, like, shoot at the Parshendi. But they don't mind if they hit some of the bridgemen, so. And in point of fact, one of them hits Dunny. Because it's this green and white fletched arrow that I think is the Sadius arrows.
Fucking dicks.
Yeah, because it mentions that the Parshendi one are thick and black shafted, while the Sadius ones are light green fletched. So. Mm.
I did think that would make Kaladin particularly angry.
Right? Yeah. Although, not a surprise for anyone that Sadius does not give a shit about the Bridgemen.
True.
But it's just like, killing them just, not because of enemy hitting them, but just because your own side doesn't care enough to avoid them. That's very sad.
Yeah, it's not cool.
And so Dunny, like, he gets the arrow in his shoulder, which he could probably recover from, except for the fact that Sadius's horses rush in to cross the bridge, and they run him down. And Kaladin tries to go and do something for him, but Moash is like, no, he's dead. There's nothing you could have done. He has to, like, physically pull Kaladin back and throw him down.
Yeah. He's dead, Jim.
And so they watch the rest of the battle, and, like, at parade rest, it says. And then one of the other bridge crews, an injured guy from there, comes crawling this way with an arrow in his thigh, and Kaladin's like, oh, here, let me try to help this guy. Which until now, they've just been helping their own bridge crew, wounded members. But he starts trying to treat this guy from another bridge crew. And Rock is like, I mean, you know how the other bridge crews treat us. He says, I don't care. And Drahi says, we don't have any money left. We barely have enough food and bandages for our own men, let alone someone else. And Kaladin says, I don't care. And they keep trying to come up with reasons why this is a bad idea. And then he's like, storm you. Look at that. Who cares for them? Not Sadius. Not their fellow bridgemen. I doubt even the heralds themselves spare a thought for these. I won't stand and watch while men die. And so he has his people bring a bunch of other wounded from the other bridge crews, and he starts treating them. And one of the guys is like, how will I get back if I can't walk on the leg? And he says, we'll carry you. And the guy's just like, oh my god, thank you. I like Teft is like, okay, this isn't complaining, because you told us to stop complaining, but how many men do you think we can carry back? And Kaladin has figured out that they can carry probably 7. He's like, what if we have more than that? And Kaladin's like, I don't know. Okay, shut up.
We'll come back for him. Just leave me alone. We're going to do it.
And there's a moment where Teft's like, Kelek's breath. It's true. I never thought. And Kaladin's like, what? What are you talking about? Oh, nothing. Get back to work. So he's about to say something there. Who knows what? You're still carrying that pouch of spheres like I told you? And Kaladin's like, yeah, I think there's something wrong with these. Like, they don't hold Stormlight well. They go done after a few days every time. It's happening to some of the other bridgemen, too. And Teft's like, oh, yeah, that's weird, huh? Isn't it strange also how this was a really bad approach? 3 bridges downed, lots of bridgemen dead, but we didn't lose anyone. We lost Dunny. Yeah, but not on the approach. You always run point and the arrows seem to miss us. Weird, huh? And Cal's like, what are you saying exactly? Nothing. Get back to that sewing. How many times do I have to tell you? So yeah.
Teft, will you please just stop winking at me and making those nudging motions?
It's so true.
This is awkward. I gotta go. Gotta sew this guy up before he bleeds out.
it is bizarre. Like somebody mentioned, it was just like Teft clearly knows something, and he's like hinting so hard, and Kaladin is just like oblivious.
He's like, dude, I don't know the story, okay?
He's doing the Homer Simpson and Mr. Burns thing. Is he coming on to me?
Is this a gay thing? No.
Are you sure? Yeah.
Yes. Classic. So
short-lived what was that, 6 episode show?
Yeah, although only 2 episodes ever aired, so
yeah. Was that one of I think that was one of them.
No, because that was the first episode. I think it was the second episode was the first one to air, which the joke about the second episode of, we're talking about Clerks, the animated series, for anyone who doesn't know, the joke about the second episode of the show is it's a clip show that just shows clips from the first episode because that was the only one that existed. And they never showed the first episode. So, oh, they screwed that show over so hard.
They did. I still have the DVDs, though.
Yeah, me too. Some great audio commentaries on there.
I have to check and see what players they're working, because they're all Region 1, not Region 4.
Yeah. Mm. I had a region-free DVD player I bought at some point just to avoid any of that. I don't know where it ended up. And so Khaled is thinking, like, you're trying to make up for failing Dunny, but helping these others won't bring him back. And then Moash comes over and he's like, hey, look, about Dunny. And Khaled's like, no, you were right. You probably saved my life. Thank you. And Moash goes, I was wrong about you. You're a fool and an instigator, but you're an honest one. If you get us killed, it won't be on purpose. And I can't say that for some that I've served under. Thanks, I guess, Moash.
Appreciated, question mark?
I heard some debate about whether it's pronounced Moash or Mosh. And I was just like, I can't imagine saying Mosh.
Mosh. Mosh def.
Mosh def. But those are our chapters. So what do you guys think? What can we expect? So let's get some predicaments going.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really have a lot, I think, regarding Kaladin. I think we're going to see, well, I really hope we're going to see some development soon about him learning about what Teft is clearly getting at. it would be nice to have some answers there. And I hope that that leads us probably a little closer to however book one's going to end. I realize that it's a big series, but I hope some things are going to be wrapped up in this story. And I don't really know. And I always get to this point every Sanderson book. I'm like, I don't know how he's going to wrap it up here. And he always manages to do it in some form. So I'm going to give him some credit and go, look, he's going to find a way. But I'm not expecting a completely satisfying ending because I know there's so much more to come.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to see Shallan for a little while. We already know that. I think we know that. But I hope that when we do, there's some kind of reference back to what's happened with Seth and, you know, assassinating the king. I don't recall exactly where her family sit. Like, her father wasn't a high prince, was he? He's not that high up.
No. What she said was that she thought he may have been, like, jockeying to become high prince after their current high prince, like, died or something, I think. But so he wasn't there. He may have been, like, yeah, not too far under that.
Yeah, okay. So it could have possibly in the future become one, but not at that time. But yeah, he's no longer there. I sort of hope that that whole story kind of wraps in together, which is then going to tie into Seth. Kaladin's story hopefully aligns with Seth a little bit. And we've got to get Dalinar's visions and then Kaladin's visions also. So I can see how all the pieces are starting to, this familiarity in all of their stories to get them to come together. I'm starting to think that we probably won't see our characters actually meet up in this book.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've predicted that Dalinar won't make it. I'm hoping that he will actually make it now, so I'm going to change my mind and go, no, he will make it. Navani, oh, I don't trust her, and she knows too much across the board. So I think that maybe she'll end up using some of this information. I don't think she'll go and purposefully leak information, but I don't know. I don't know how much I trust her with that information. I definitely trust her less than Dalinar does. Could be interesting to see if Yasna comes back this way, perhaps with her uncle's visions. Maybe she will find something of interest in them given her field of study at the moment. I don't know that it would warrant coming all the way back, but perhaps there are words that Navani will relay to Yasna that she hasn't heard somewhere else or has heard somewhere else that is familiar. So it could actually be interesting to see Yasna join up with everyone instead of seeing Shallan joining up with people first. But yeah, I don't really have much of an idea really where we're going. The only thought that I had fairly early on in Kaladin's chapter was maybe they could just run. Like, they could just leave. They could play dead and leave. No one will go back for them. I don't know if they'll check thoroughly that they're actually dead, but maybe they could be severely wounded enough, although no one would probably believe it after so many runs of not being injured. But that'd be one way out. They assume you're dead.
I guess the question is, if they think the whole bridge crew is dead, do they take the bridge with them when they leave? Because if they did that, then your whole bridge crew is stuck out there on the plateau with nowhere to go.
True. but didn't they have someone kind of mapping out the chasms?
Yeah, I think so.
So they could get to a point where they're close enough to the exit and then not have to go, like they could go down into the chasms and just leave.
Yeah.
Maybe. And yeah. They take water and stuff with them. No one's checking what they're actually bringing with them on the bridge run. There's no reason you couldn't bring like a ladder, rope ladder or something. Mm. Not that I don't know how they'd get rope, but they could make an exit that way, just not make it back to camp.
That's fair. Yeah. They could probably sneak all sorts of stuff out there if they needed to. They have to get the stuff first, but yeah.
Yeah, they've got a little bit of time. Not a lot, but a little bit.
Yeah. Interesting point about Yasna possibly coming in, because almost since we met Dalinar, he's been like, I want Yasna back. So if she showed up on the Shattered Plains, he would at least be very happy about it.
Yeah, they could be an interesting team to watch together.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting if like you said, if maybe our characters don't meet up again in this book. It really does seem like Yasna especially is far away from everybody else. Yasna and Shallan is like they're in a different city entirely. So you could see maybe them not meeting each other. If Kaladin and Dalinar spent this entire book so close and never met, that'd be sad. Mm. Not impossible.
And not impossible. You know, maybe they meet in like the closing scene of the book or something. Mm. Like. It could be very, very close to the end. I just we're running out of book. And I know there's still a bit of book to go, but there's a lot that has to happen to get people there.
We are 74% of the way through the book at this point. So yeah. There's still some book, but you're right, we're running out of pages.
Mm.
Okay. So my prediction this week. So we've seen Seth tear apart Yaakoved, and like in Dalinar's chapter, there's a bit of mention. It's like, oh man, what happens if, if Alethkar went to war with Yaakoved? And we're just like, well, that's not going to happen because of what's just gone down. But I think there's an element to this which we haven't really considered yet, and that's the fact that it's going to get out that the king of Yaakoved was murdered, and it was murdered by the assassin in white. So how do we think Elokar is going to respond to that? Elokar is already paranoid as shit about assassins. He's banging on about this saddle which might have broken. So, but if he hears that another assassin has appeared in Yaakoved, and it'll probably come out that, oh, it's the same one that killed your dad, Elokar is gonna freak the fuck out. Our poor king is gonna become a gibbering mess. I don't know how far this would go, but I could see like the entire campaign at the Shattered Plains falling apart because Elokar does not think rationally about assassins. He does not think rationally about the assassins that killed his dad. If he said, all right, fuck this, the army, we're going straight to Yaakoved and finding this assassin. And they're like, sir, I don't think we can do that. We're fucking going. They're like, okay, king's ordered it. We got to go. I don't know if he would go that far, but yeah. Elokar is going to lose his mind in the coming chapters, and I want to see what he's going to do.
That's an interesting thought, because they're here to get revenge for what happened to his father. Although, as far as they know, like the assassin may or may not be here. They're just going after the Parshendi, and now they get word the assassin is somewhere else. Is he too scared to go after him, or is he like, oh well, that's who we should be going after, and like take the? That's a really good point. It's hard to know which way he'd go.
Yeah, I don't remember. Was it ever confirmed? Like, did the Alethi know that the Parshendi ordered it? Did the Parshendi claim credit for it?
Yes, the Parshendi claimed credit. They said that they were the ones who did it, and that's why they're here.
All right, so in that case, he might leave the army to, like, keep doing their thing and take out the Parshendi, but he might take a force and, like, all right, we're going to find this dude. I guess if he took the army into Yaakoved, they'd be like, that's an act of war, so...
Yeah, but who knows how many men like they have available to fight with three of the High Princes and the King down now.
True, true.
But that would be a switch if we go and move into a completely different war from here.
Yeah. The thing is like, yeah, Elokar is not a rational man when it comes to assassins, and especially that particular assassin, so he might do it anyway. Who knows?
Could be, yeah.
And to back on that, you've gone to an extreme there, Dak, of, you know, changing war tactic and all that sort of stuff. But if he panics and is not thinking rationally, he could make a decision about Dalinar that he maybe wouldn't have made, or evidence doesn't suggest. Like, we know Dalinar's not behind the assassination, or we think we know Dalinar's not behind it, but maybe Elokar will just cut people off. I have a suspicion about you, you're out.
That's true.
could create that war between, you know, Dalinar's army and Sadeas's army or the other high princes or anything like that. Like, yeah, it's got, I hadn't really factored in Elokar, but yeah, I can see why he would have a problem.
Yeah. But you're right. If he doesn't react rationally and like starts doing all this crazy, like, we're going to Yarkaved, and Dalinar's like, dude, bad idea, starting another war right now. And Elokar says, you're not agreeing with me. Fuck you. And then you got infighting. Like, have him arrested.
There's another king too.
What was that?
You've got another king in Kaer Brunth, don't you? So
that's true.
They
that's
could go there ahead yeah. of time. Yeah, to try and stop a future. I mean, I know this is like 6 years apart between assassinations, but if it's the same guy, I mean, if you were another king out there, I would be watching myself.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Jamie's statement about, like, we think we know Dalinar's not behind this. What would happen if at the end of the book it turned out Dalinar was behind the assassination attempt?
No.
I mean, I'd be pretty pissed off.
here's your crackpot theory about that. Dalinar's not behind it. His wife is. She's not dead, and he's lost the memory, so he doesn't know.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, let's go full crackpot. Let's go full crackpot.
I think Adolin and Renarin might be like, Mom is definitely dead.
You told us her mom was dead. What do you mean?
I thought she was.
I guess we have no idea how she died, so it could be mysterious. Who knows? Dalinar can't remember anything about her, so he probably doesn't know either.
Yeah.
Yes. You guys made a lot of good, interesting points with Dalinar. I think I'm going to take a different tack. I think when Dalinar finds out that the assassin in white is active in Yarkaved, he's going to be like, okay, Elokar, let's leave and go get him. Because the whole reason we're fighting the Parshendi is because of this guy. Let's go kill him. So I think Dalinar is going to be leading the charge to go and get this assassin in white. So I think that's going to be the part that's causing political tensions. Because at the end of the day, Elokar is going to be like, well, no, I kind of like being here and getting gem hearts. And Dalinar is going to be like, then what the heck are we doing here? Like, just getting gem hearts? You don't even care about your dad anymore? Like... And it's going to basically be like, you can't call the king on his BS posturing, so you're going to be out. I think if there's an out, like, that's going to be it.
Mm.
And so I think it's going to go that way, as opposed to Elokar being like, let's go, and Dalinar be like, no, it's not. I think it's going to be the opposite. So then with Kaladin, yeah, I mean, I'm going to predict this because I would just love this to happen. I'd love for him to understand what's going on with him himself. So that would be lovely. I want to predict that that's going to happen. I've already predicted that he's, you know, possibly going to be able to meet up with Dalinar in some way. So hopefully that'll happen as well. But yeah, like, first and foremost, like, figure out what's going on with you, man. That would be great.
I like this idea that Dalinar is the one who wants to go, because we know that he's got very strong feelings about how he failed his brother that night being passed out drunk on the ground. So I could totally see that being the case. I mean, but like, is Seth going to even hang around in one place long enough for anyone to try to get him? He's got a list. He's got to keep going on the list. Somebody mentioned, like, we know another king. Maybe he needs to be watching out. What if he showed up in like a Yasna Shallan chapter to try to take out Taravangian?
No, we like Taravangian.
He's a nice old man. Well, he got killed a nice old man. All he wants to do is like let people use his hospitals to get better. Like, what a random person to want to heal.
I mean,
also, we've got no idea what the motives of this guy is, because he's obviously got a new master since he's just happened to have taken out two kings. This last one sounds a little more sinister than the first one, but we don't know what their motives are.
That's a good point. Yeah, definitely, I agree. It seems more sinister. And also definitely, we have no idea why any of this is happening. So I hadn't even considered that at first, but you make a good point. Like, we don't know who this guy might have on the list to kill, because we don't know why he wants to kill anybody. Yeah, okay. Or girl.
Actually, he had a list. Didn't it say something about there were a couple of kings on it or something? Was it this?
Let me go back to that chapter real quick. Okay, so he says there... These are some of the most powerful people in the world. Six high princes, a Sele Gerontark, and the King of Yarkaved. So I guess we knew he was going after the King of Yarkaved. But, interesting. Okay. It'll be interesting to see what predictions come true about any of this. If any. Everyone's just wrong. I'm sorry. Nothing is going to happen. Okay, let's
that was actually the end of the book.
Yeah, that's it. Isn't that weird? No, we have 8 more episodes left.
Ooh.
The next 3 episodes are 2-chapter episodes because they're longer chapters, but then after that, we're getting bigger chunks.
That Santa starts to launch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, we have a couple emails and 1 new review this time. So I'll read an email, and Joe, we have 1 new email and 1 new review. I'll read the email, and Joe, you can get your list of mistings ready while I do that.
Misting power.
Actually, this email has a review attached to it, so I guess we'll need 2 of those. But so this is from Derek, and the email says is titled "Stares Intently Until the 6:31 Mark." First, apologies for my first couple emails. A, it should have been True Soul, not True Mind. B, the first email was sent before I heard the episodes where the Patreon fairing crew were discussed. And when I'm able to back, I will accept whatever medal I get. C, my second email should have included my own predicament that Allomantic Aluminum / Duralumin will somehow be more useful in Eras 3 and 4. That's interesting, maybe. And not just for spike fodder / grenade fillers. There is a word of Brandon that point at least to the investiture cleansing properties of aluminum and the potential benefits thereof. That's interesting. I have to look for that. Second, now that I'm caught up, Dak, I love the Kelsier bringing down gods / shards theory. Gives kind of a Final Fantasy 12 feeling. Reigns of history in the hands of man and all. Joe, I know you'll get that one. Also, why you gotta go hating on Moash? He's done nothing wrong.
Dude, Jamie, makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, well, there you go. Sometimes you can't help it.
Yeah.
Jamie, I was not suspicious of Cab's Hall when I first read it, but you were really onto something there. Good eye. Lastly, yeah. We all watched. Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say we can spot him.
Yeah, we're so used to picking out secret bad guys now.
I know why you're sad. It's because of the jam.
I gotta say, I didn't expect that if Cab's Hall ever disappeared, I'd be sorry to see him go. But I am, if for no other reason than I was really enjoying the jam addict jokes that we had.
Yeah, jam addict jokes. I mean, we can still make them. It's fine.
We can. But it's like, yeah. I like when we like have some random character, we make up a running gag about them. Like, yeah, you know, Drion crushed through the cooking pirate.
The cooking pirate, right?
Sure.
It turned out he was.
Yeah, that was the most impressive part of it.
Yep.
You know, we could have like Capsule's ghost, the jam addict ghost. He couldn't he's shuffle in the off the mortal coil completely because he has to have the jam.
Kelsier hung around in the cognitive realm because he's a survivor. Cabsal hung around in the cognitive realm because he really wanted some fucking jam.
He's got to have it.
Oh, jam addict Cabsal. Okay, sorry. Derek finishes. Lastly, have you all watched the backer kit reveal video? I know watching videos from the Sanderson site / YouTube can be potentially spoiler fraught, but if you can't, I want to hear thoughts. Thank you for everything. Crabs ahoy from Derek. I mean, I watched the backer kit reveal video, but honestly, I can't remember if there were any. But we talked about last time, the backer kit stuff, so we won't get into that again. And then
I only look at things if Data says I can, and I just assume everything's off.
Good plan.
Same.
Okay, he attached a review, 5 stars, a wonderful journey through the Cosmere. I'm impressed by how the crew moves through with daring guesses that hit as often as they miss. Looking forward to more volcano theories as we go through the Stormlight Archive.
You soother you. So soothing was that review.
All right. And then we have 1 new review on Apple Podcasts from SW _ Pants. Good name. The Star Wars Pants? Or are we talking about like Han Solo's Pants?
SW _ Pants. Yeah, I don't know.
Fun discussions with Brando Sando stories. Great for both newbies and old souls of Sanderson. I came for the Sanderson, stayed for the Sanderson plus Final Fantasy references. This is a very interesting podcast where a person has read all of the Sanderson books and 3 of the others are new to his work. They discuss spoilers only for the stories they've talked about, and it's a lot of fun hearing Jamie, Dak, and Joe speculate on where plots and character development may go. Data does a great job as moderator to guide discussions without dropping spoilers, or if he does, it's so subtle that only people in the know will recognize it. They also choose a new song for each book, which adds to the episodes. I thought I wanted a complete spoiler podcast, but this is just as great.
Oh, man. What a great review. Thank you for that. You are a seeker.
It's true that I can't help dropping a little thing now and then to thinking that it won't be recognized. Just like being like, oh, you think the capsule's giving them like poison jam and bread? It's just I can't help myself. You coy. I'm sorry.
You coy, coy, sly bastard.
Reading from his card.
It is a talent.
Yeah. This guy reads from a card.
All right. So those are our emails and reviews. If you want to send us an email, The address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram and X and Patreon, where I'm still posting my first read-through of Defiant. It's almost done at this point, and then I'll have to figure out what I'm going to do next. So, for next time, two chapters. Like I said, we're going to do chapters 54 and 55 with titles Gibbletish and An Emerald Brome.
So, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, was that chapter, the first one? Chapter 54 is called Gibbletish. Gibbletish.
Yeah, you know, the old Gibbletish.
Maybe we need to start making that like a feature where it's like, here's what the next chapters are called. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. Gibbletish, the study Gibbleology, the study of Gibble.
Are you sure it's meant to be Gibbletish and not Giblet-ish?
I don't think it's Giblet-ish. No, I don't think that's correct, but I guess it could be.
There are no giblets in this chapter?
I don't recall. It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean,
when's the last time you had a good
maybe they're just giblet-ish.
Yeah. When's the last time you had a good giblet, Deck?
That depends on how you define giblet, I guess. Would you count mincemeat that you put in a taco as a giblet?
Did it come from a chicken?
Maybe.
Maybe. It was some kind of meat.
We could all cut
some meat. Mystery meat.
But yes, two chapters for next time, 54 and 55. Music by Miracle of Sound. If you check out, I mentioned the Patreon, the email, check out the Discord if you want, where people chat it up on our Discord. You can find a link at our website, www.thesanderlanch.com, if you want to join the Discord. And wasn't to the time of next. Colo, PS Fasher. Crab at thee.